There's still no green cheese, but there is water on the moon. Air taxi service returns to Greenville Downtown Airport. And Flying Cloud Airport welcomes business jets. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, November 16th, 2009. In an announcement important enough to have Google putting up special graphics on its homepage Saturday, NASA announced Friday that the L-Cross lunar orbiter's impact with the south pole of the moon and subsequent analysis of the debris plume it sent up has demonstrated conclusively the presence of water. The discovery is immensely significant, not only because there may be ancient geological secrets preserved in polar ice, but because future manned missions to the moon and Mars might be able to use lunar water to sustain human life in lunar colonies and manufacture rocket fuel on the moon, both of which could greatly reduce the weight of spacecraft launched from Earth. Find out more detail on this story in the full-length text version dated November 14th at aero-news.net. As of early this morning, NASA said the weather forecast for Kennedy Space Center remains 90% favorable for an on-time launch of the shuttle Atlantis at 2:28 p.m. Eastern Time this afternoon. The countdown continues. When pioneering air taxi provider SatsAir shut down suddenly on October 23rd, it came as a huge disappointment to Greenville, South Carolina. The city had looked forward to a longer-term partner in generating economic activity based at the Greenville Downtown Airport. Now, OpenAir has announced it's expanding to fill that void, with service based at TAC Air, a jet center located on the field. OpenAir is based in the Washington, D.C. area and boasts that its air taxi service has grown 800% since 2005. Like SatsAir did, OpenAir flies Cirrus single-engine piston aircraft and says it's now the largest Cirrus-based air taxi service. In a situation similar to that of many small cities, Greenville's downtown airport is much more convenient for many regional business flights than GSP. Find out more about OpenAir at www.flyopenair.com. Business jets have another option now in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area with the reopening of a new longer 5,000-foot runway 10 right, 28 left at Flying Cloud Airport. In addition to being lengthened 1,100 feet, the runway has also been widened from 75 to 100 feet. The MAC, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which owns and operates Flying Cloud and six other airports in the Twin Cities area, broke ground on the $17 million improvement project in August of 2008. It also extended runway 10 left, 28 right by 301 feet to a new total of 3,900. The taxiway system was extended, and navigational aids are in the process of being relocated. A new south building area was developed to accommodate additional aircraft hangars as demand warrants. In his comments, MAC Chairman Jack Lanners has an attitude that sounds refreshing compared to aviation-related rhetoric elsewhere in politics. Quote, a 5,000-foot runway designed for today's business jets, together with a new building area, make Flying Cloud Airport a strong selling point in attracting businesses to the region and retaining those already here. These improvements help send a message that this is a great area in which to conduct business and create jobs, unquote. Up next on ANN, U.S. Airways pilots want federal mediation. The Airbus A400M inches closer to its first flight. And Boeing still insists the Dreamliner will fly before the year is out. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 16th. I'm Paul Plack. USAPA, the U.S. Airline Pilots Association, representing the pilots of U.S. Airways, has applied to the National Mediation Board to request mediation of negotiations for all U.S. Airways pilots. U.S. Airways pilots have been working under two separate contracts, one covering pilots who worked for the pre-merger U.S. Airways, and another for those who came over from America West when it acquired U.S. Airways. The pilots from the old U.S. Airways rebelled against the Airline Pilots Association in April of 2008, charging the union didn't adequately represent their interests in negotiating a post-merger agreement on issues including pilot seniority. They voted by a 52-48 margin to create USAPA, a new and separate union, and that has further complicated talks with the airline. In April of this year, the new union requested a federal facilitator, but the airline refused. Under terms of the Railway Labor Act, airlines have a number of options to stall negotiations for months or years without fear of a strike. Captain Mike Cleary, president of USAPA, says it's time to put the talks under a federal mediator. That starts a long process which could eventually lead to a strike. Or as he puts it, quote, where impasse allows us to persuade our company to do the right thing, unquote. The much-delayed Airbus A400M military transport development program is making progress. The first A400M has been handed over to the Airbus Flight Test Organization. That happened on Thursday of last week. It's ready to start ground testing, which precedes a first flight that Airbus still says will happen before the end of this year. The groundwork includes static testing and engine run-ups, which will be followed by low-speed taxis and brakings, then high-speed trials with a rejected takeoff at about 120 knots. The A400M is a big turboprop. It's powered by four engines of 11,000 shaft horsepower each, provided by Europrop International, which is a joint venture among Rolls-Royce, Snecma, MTU Aero Engines, and Industria de Turbopropulsores. There's similar optimism over the 787 at Boeing. That company says it has completed installing reinforcements within the side of body section on the first Dreamliner and still says it will make its first flight this year. The modification entails installing new fittings at 34 stringer locations within the joint where the wing is attached to the fuselage. Installations were reportedly completed last Wednesday. Boeing says it expects to complete the installations on the static test airframe and the second flight test airplane in coming days. Scott Fancher, VP and GM of the 787 program, promises, quote, as soon as we confirm the loads are being handled appropriately in the joint, we will complete pre-flight activities on the airplane, unquote. Still ahead, the RAF's Red Arrows has its first female pilot. Able Flight teams with Purdue University. And the internet keeps making miracles happen. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, November 16th. I'm Paul Platt. 31-year-old Flight Lieutenant Kirsty Moore has become the first female fast jet pilot in the RAF to qualify for the Red Arrow's aerobatic demonstration team and will begin performing at air shows next year. She tells the BBC, quote, it's an awesome job. To be told I had been selected was one of the best days of my life. It was incredible. The girl thing is an aside for me because I have been a female all my life and I've been a pilot since joining the RAF. Hopefully in a small way, by me being a Red Arrows pilot, some girls might think that this is something they could be a part of and they should go for it, unquote. Moore joined the RAF in 1998. She became a Hawk instructor, then a Tornado pilot. While she's not the first woman to apply for the Red Arrows, she is the first to be shortlisted and then selected. Moore credits her father, a retired RAF navigator, for inspiring her to join the service. She holds a master's degree in aeronautical engineering from Imperial College in London. There's a joke in here somewhere about glass ceilings and ejection seats, but I can't quite find it. Kirsty, congratulations. Able Flight, which helps people overcome disabilities by teaching them to fly, is partnering with Purdue University's Department of Aviation Technology to offer a joint flight training project in 2010. During the summer, between 2 and 4 Able Flight scholarship recipients will live in university housing and be trained by university instructors in an intensive teaching environment as they earn their sport pilot certificate in a month. Able Flight will select scholarship winners from its pool of candidates, with priority given to current or incoming Purdue students and other Indiana residents with physical disabilities. Able Flight will also provide at least one specially adapted light sport airplane for the project. Able Flight will also provide transitional training for university instructors in the LSA. The project also provides Purdue with the opportunity to evaluate future use of LSAs for primary training. Able Flight's Charles Stites says that beyond the benefits of his group's normal program, disabled student pilots in the new program, quote, will be immersed in flying in a demanding but supportive setting and have the chance to explore opportunities for future undergraduate and graduate degrees in aviation, unquote. The program is scheduled to start in May or June. And finally, a reunion of sorts happened on Veterans Day last week in defiance of incredible odds. Former Vietnam POW and retired U.S. Air Force Colonel James Hivner was there at the Kavanaugh Flight Museum, accompanied by family, friends, and members of the Air Force family from Shepherd Air Force Base. But that's not the reunion we're talking about. He was met by retired U.S. Navy Commander Rick Tolley. But that wasn't the reunion either. Tolley was there to present Hivner with his original wedding ring, which was found by a former Vietnamese Army soldier 44 years after it was taken from Hivner when he was shot down, beginning his 8 years as a POW. Along with the wedding ring were Hivner's dog tag and a small cross. At the ceremony last week, Hivner's wife Phyllis put the ring back on his hand. If this is a miracle, expect many more. Tolley says he tracked Hivner down on the internet. What did we ever do without it? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, are pilots nodding off at the yoke just an airline problem? I'll talk about it with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.